welcome back to everyone for our second talk. We had Ben Gamage from Harvard who told us about Abelian tree barysymmetry and boundary functions.
All right, great. Thanks for coming, everyone, and thanks for inviting me. So this talk, as you can currently see on the screen, is going to be on some joint work of mine with Justin Hilburn and Aaron Mazelgee, and of course some continuing work in progress. This is slightly different than the talk I usually give on this subject because I think people have had a week of some background material on this. Everyone who came to the event last week, and you know, I think the general theme of these talks is sort of. We're maybe in the spirit of talking about boundary conditions, line operators, and so forth in supersymmetric QFTs, topological twists. But I want everyone to stop and ask me questions whenever you like. I've written down my sort of things ahead of time here, which I don't normally do. But I'm still very flexible, and I hope that we can stop at various points, and I can add more things and clarify. And I've left some room at the end for questions and different directions, depending on how much time we have left and what people would like to hear more about. So let me start. The starting point of the talk today is going to be X is going to be a holomorphic symplectic stack. So the example that you should keep in mind is X equals T star V mod G, the cotangent bundle of a stack given by the quotient of an algebraic variety V by a reductive group G that's actinomic. In all the examples that we discussed today, V is going to be a vector space, which is why I've written it as V. But of course, in general, we might want to allow more general algebraic varieties, especially when we're in this setting of kind of 3D, 4D coupled systems. The whole Benz V, Sakalaridis, Venkatesh program of understanding how to get boundary conditions for the geometric Langlands theory using spherical varieties, we would like to allow V to be something other than a vector space. But in this talk, V is going to be a vector space. So from this data, we get a 3D n equals 4 theory. And as Kevin told us in his talk last week, those of you who came, we should really think that any sort of mathematical discussion we have about these supersymmetric field theories is going to factor through the twists. So this 3D n equals 4 theory has a couple of topological twists. That's what the talk is going to be about. And I'm going to try and maintain this color scheme of the A model and the B model. So this talk is going to be about this 3D mirror symmetry conjecture, proposal, duality, whatever, which says that given one of these 3D n equals 4 theories, there is another theory. So if I call my first theory T, then there's going to be another theory T check with the property that the A twist of T is equivalent to the B twist of T check and vice versa. So once again, this sort of statement comes initially in the form of some kind of statement about the an involution on the 3D n equals 4 supersymmetry algebra, but that involution sort of exchanges the supersymmetries which we use for the two topological twists. So kind of the goal of this talk is to figure out kind of how to make sense of that mathematically. And lots of sort of incarnations of this 3D mirror symmetry have appeared in the literature before over the past decade. And my goal in this talk is to tell you the best one, which is like only now starting to sort of percolate down into mathematics. So in good cases, I should have said, in good cases, each of these theories, since I'm just talking about 3D n equals 4 theory, in this talk, all of the 3D n equals 4 theories we discuss are going to be theories of this form, where X is the cotangent bundle to V mod G. So the examples we want to keep in mind are this sort of, this is the one of the sort of most important examples and the one I learned from Telemann's ICM address, although it's obviously been circulating a lot in many different forms, which is that if X is the cotangent bundle of BG, so this is what a physicist would call pure G gauge theory. I guess really pure gauge theory for the compact form of the group, then X check is going to be this by Whitaker reduction. So you take the cotangent bundle of the Langlands dual group and you take a Hamiltonian reduction by the unipotent group on both sides at a regular character. And this X check, of course, has many different guises. Maybe I should have said this is also given by chains on the equivariant Satake space. So G or G mod G of O. So that's another spec of this. So that's another manifestation of this space here. So that's one of the most important cases, one we're not going to talk about too much today, except in the abelian case. So when G equals C star, then X check is just the cotangent bundle of the dual C star. So this is what physicists have traditionally called particle vortex duality. That sort of on the left-hand side X, we have this gauge particle, and then on the right-hand side, like the sort of gauge particle is exchanged with some like vortex that has winding number around this C star. So I'll give that example in more detail later. The other example, the main one in this talk, is going to be if X is the cotangent bundle to C mod C star, then X check is going to be the cotangent bundle to C. So on the left-hand side, we would say this is a gauge hypermultiplet, and on the right-hand side, this is a free hypermultiplet. And these two things are going to be exchanged by this 3D mirror symmetry. So as I said, our goal in this talk is to kind of make sense of some of this mathematically. So maybe I should pause here to see if there's any questions before I keep going. I worry that having written everything down is going to make me too fast here. Yeah.
I have a quick question. I had an impression that unless you introduce stability, these theories will be the intersection of Higgs branch and Coulomb branch. So they will be very singular. So why is there an expectation? The usual symplectic duality, as far as I understand, is the story of introducing stability on kind of both sides in S and D, which creates mass and Fi parameter.
Yes, so the story that mathematicians have usually told in the past sort of involves imposing the mass and Fi parameters, which we'll see at the very end of this talk. The position that I want to advocate for here is that kind of the real duality is happening like at the level of the stacks. And then there's, you know, and then the mass and Fi parameters get exchanged. So we'll see later on that turning on one side turns on the other side and vice versa. But kind of the deeper duality really involves the stacks. And I would say this is apparent in a lot of work that people have done on this mathematically, like the whole kind of Okunkov school of counting these stable quasi maps really relies on knowing not just sort of the variety after you've imposed the stability conditions, but it requires knowing the stack that your variety came from in the first place. So that's my position, is that it's really about the stack. And it's not even maybe totally possible to talk about 3D mirror symmetry without at least having the stack in the background somewhere. Although experts can jump in and disagree if they want to disagree.
OK, thank you.
OK, any other questions? OK, so how are we going to make sense of this mathematically? I would say that let me sort of recall what's been done so far. So Braverman Finkelberg Nakajima gave a construction of the, so we have these theories. Maybe I should just back up a second and say that these are topological twists. The A model and the B model are topological twists of a three-dimensional field theory. So kind of a lot of the big moral of the first part of this talk is just going to be saying, like, if you have a 3D field theory, if you have a 3D topological field theory, how do you understand it? And this is something that, you know, we're all experts in, like, oh yeah, TFT, it's, you know, blah, 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 you know, maybe two categories, I'll get to that later, but maybe like, you know, what are its boundary conditions, what are its local operators, what are its line defects, blah, blah, blah. So like the first thing you might say is like, what's the E3 algebra of local operators? For some people, you know, this is all they believe in. If you tell them you have a 3D theory, they'll tell you, what's the local operators? And so Braverman, Finkelberg, Nakajima calculated that the E3 algebra sort of proposed, you know, based on analysis of the kind of gauge theory equations, that the E3 algebra of local operators in the A twist to a cotangent bundle is given by chains on the space of maps from the formal bubble to the base of the cotangent bundle. So this formal bubble B is, we've seen it last week, it's the union of two disks glued together along the formal punctured disk. So you should think of this as the sort of algebraic geometer's version of an S2. So in other words, we're sort of plugging in an S2, like what happens if we plug in an S2 to our theory? So we learned last week from Justin that if we plug in an S2 to the 3DA model, we're supposed to get this this space of maps from that S2 to V mod G, Durham, and you know we quantize this, we take functions on it, whatever, and we get chains on that space. And so this E3 algebra of local operators in the A twist is supposed to be equal to the E3 algebra of local operators in the B twist, which is something about algebraic geometry. And from that, you can recover holomorphic functions on the mirror. So this was Braverman, Finkelberg, Nakajima's proposal for how to construct the mirror space if you only had your original space X. So this was the Coulomb branch construction. Afterward, they also suggested that you can study not just the E3 algebra of local operators, but the E2 category of line operators in the A-twist. And this E2 category of line operators is related to the category of D-modules on the mapping space of the formal punctured disk, once again, to the base of this cotangent bundle. So once again,
this is a very important remark. I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? This was not our suggestion. This was probably Gisbert Goldberg, Baxter David, the Tudor, Phil Sung Yu, and Justin.
Okay, sorry. This is
Dimoft,
Gaiotto.
I learned it from them. So
Yu, Elburn. Okay, so there's a lot of people that I just failed to name. Sorry. I'm sure I'm missing people here who have made suggestions of this form. I meant to indicate that this calculation was maybe used by you guys in order to construct line bundles and resolutions of this singular variety. But the idea goes back further to the physics. And I should say, I'm only saying kind of related here because I'm cheating a little by talking about D modules. I really want to be in Betty twist throughout this talk. So I should say something like perverse sheaves. I'll talk about that later. But like to a first approximation, you can think about D modules. And so once again, you can think about this category as like, okay, my field theory involves like maps of S1 into the, like I plug in an S1, which is my punctured formal disk. And now I need to get a category, and the category, you know, for the reasons that this is an A-type theory is something like D modules. And from this calculation, you can produce the category, you can study, you're getting, according to the 3D mirror heuristic, the category, the E2 category of line operators in the mirror B twist. And you can use this to produce coherent sheaves on the mirror variety. Ben Webster used this trick to give a calculation of the category of coherent sheaves on one of these Coulomb branches. And also, in this work of Justin Hilburn and Sam Raskin, they also used this heuristic to give a sort of proof of 3D mirror symmetry at the level of the E2 categories, the full E2 categories of line operators in the two theories. I might mention that later. Any questions about what I've said so far? I'm hoping that this is familiar to anyone who went to the talks last week. So this was just sort of some review of what happened there. Okay. So what I'd like to propose now, as you may have guessed from like going up this categorical level, and just as you may have guessed from like, if you know like what a 3D TFT is, like if you're like, oh, 3D TFT, I remember there's some paper about Lurie, you know, or Baez-Dolan or whoever that says that like an n-dimensional TFT has like an n-1 category you associate to, which is supposed to be the boundary conditions, right? So that's what I would like to propose, is that instead of studying just the algebras of local operators or the category of line operators, you study the two category of boundary conditions for these theories. So what are boundary conditions for these theories? In either twist, the boundary conditions are given by holomorphic Lagrangian submanifolds of my holomorphic symplectic manifold. But the sort of the two categories are, of course, defined in very different ways. So let's start with the B model. This is, again, just going to be a review of Lev's talk from last week, just so we're all on the same page. So there's this, this was originally proposed. I think that the two category was proposed in this paper, Kapustin, Rozanski, Salina, and Kapustin, Rozanski, that there's this two category that you're supposed to be able to associate to a holomorphic symplectic manifold that sort of categorifies its algebraic geometry. And so once again, let's restrict to the case where X is a cotangent bundle. And then maybe my favorite objects are the zero section, say, is a Lagrangian, or the graph of a one-form DF is a Lagrangian. And we learned last week that the Hom from the zero section to the graph of DF is the category of matrix factorizations of F. And I'd like to include my sort of other favorite object. So last week we learned that there's a lot of great objects you can get by this generating functions trick. Instead, let me just say, just like decree that, you know, my favorite objects are going to be in this top, are going to be the zero section, and are going to be conormals to smooth closed subvarieties. So that's what I have on the screen now, is I can take a conormal to a smooth closed subvariety W. And I've told you what the Homs are. If I take two of these subvarieties, then the Homs between them should be coherent sheaves on the intersection, the derived intersection of these subvarieties inside of the. The derived bit is going to be very important. So the three examples you should keep in your head are, first of all, I can take the conormal to the zero section. That's just the zero section itself. So its endomorphisms are just the intersection of the zero section with itself. That's just the zero section. So, okay, so nothing derived here, you know, check, check. This is coherent sheaves on the zero section. What if I took, in fact, if I take anything, if I take either one of these to be the zero section, then the Homs from that to any conormal to a smooth subvariety is just gonna be coherent sheaves on that subvariety because they're sort of intersecting cleanly in that subvariety. And finally, what if I take the sort of most derived case where both of them are the point. So I'm looking at the conormal to a point and the Hom to itself in this two category is going to be the category of coherent sheaves on the derived intersection of the point with itself. So again, this calculation is going to be important later on. Any questions about the B model? So let me say that, here's where I have to add something. For X, a cotangent bundle, which is the setting we're going to be in this talk, this two category simplifies. This is the two category of coherent sheaves of categories on V. So I'm calling this two category 2-co. So this is a two category which unfortunately has not yet appeared in the literature, but will appear in some forthcoming work of both Dima Arinkin and Hermann Stefanich. And it's approximately what you think it is. The only important thing here is I've added to my description a singular support condition. And what this is telling me to do, this L is going to be a Lagrangian inside of the cotangent bundle of V. This is conic, a conic Lagrangian. And what this is going to tell me to do is it's going to tell me to consider, let me write it in black. This is going to tell me to consider the objects that I've discussed above, the conormals to varieties W inside of V that are contained inside of L. So in other words, I want to take my favorite objects that I said before, which were the conormals to smooth closed subvarieties, but I'm restricting myself to those smooth closed subvarieties whose conormals are contained inside of L. So this is picking out some sort of like particular collection of objects that I really like. And at the extreme, so the extreme case is that I can take L to be the zero section itself. So in this case, if I take L to be the zero section, then what do I get? The two category of coherent sheaves of categories on V with singular support in the zero section. I've written this here as 2-co of V with the yellow V at the bottom. This is just generated by a single object. This is what people call 2-q-co of V. Maybe I should say this 2-q-co of V first appeared in a paper of Dennis Gatesgory and sort of NQ-co of V has appeared in the thesis of Hermann Stefanich. This is just generated by a single object because if you only have singular support in the zero section, that means you only allow the zero section as an object. And the endomorphisms of that object are quasi-coherent sheaves on V. I'm assuming V is smooth. So that's the same thing, you know, coherent sheaves, the same thing as perfect complexes, whatever. And I'm also assuming that V is one affine, which everything that we in this talk is going to be. So therefore, this two category is very simple in that case.
Right. Can I ask you two questions? One is a terminological question. What does KRS stand for?
Kapustin, Rozanski, Salina. So that was sort of first paper where this two category was proposed.
I see. And the second question is, so you're describing this in the case when x is t star v. Yes. Is this because you just want to make things easier for you, or is there a problem with the definition in general?
Well, I told you that even in T star V, the definition of this two category still hasn't appeared in the literature. So you imagine
But in that case, I should know the definition.
Yeah. So I would say, it depends what you believe. I don't know. Like if you read, Telemann's ICM address from 2014, he gives some, explanation of what this two category is supposed to be in general. I mean, I can't completely understand the explanation in there, but, it's understandable, maybe, but it's certainly maybe a bit slightly far from what's going actual mathematics in the literature. There's some things you need to be careful about, and certainly the grading is going to break. The Z grading on your category is going to break if you're not a cotangent bundle necessarily.
But open subsets of cotangent bundles will be good.
Yeah, so I'm willing to allow risk to giving myself a stability parameter inside the cotangent bundle of a stack, and I can talk about that. I mean, Lev mentioned that last week in his talk, but for a compact X, I have no idea what to do. For instance,
something like triangulate? I mean, like the G category, or will it be only Z2 graded?
Yeah, I think that outside of the cotangent bundle setting, like if you're not an open subset of a cotangent bundle, you might only be Z2 graded.
Okay.
I think you can still maintain Z grading if stability condition respects it. That's what happens for Hilbert schemes and commutative variety, all that family.
Yes, so if we'll see later in this talk, at the end of the talk, maybe I'll mention, I can restrict myself to an open subset of a cotangent bundle. And in that case, I'm still good. I'm in this nice setting that I was in before. So you can get very far with that trick. But I think that, ultimately I was a student of David Nadler, so I'm inculcated you always want the micro-local description of whatever you're studying. So ultimately we want a sort of micro-local description of this two category, and that's not really available just yet. Although I would say there's a lot of recent work, especially I think, some of David Ben Zvi's students maybe, or I think there's a lot of people who are working on pieces of this sort of micro-local story here. Okay, any other questions about the V model? Okay, so let's move to the A model. So the main sort of innovation in this talk is going to be that we can talk about the 3D A model. So boundary conditions for the 3D A model, we remember they're holomorphic Lagrangians. And my claim is they're supposed to fit into this two category, which I'm calling two Fukaya of X. So once again, we see this distinction between the sort of cotangent polarization. Like last time, I didn't have a good name for this two category it wasn't a cotangent bundle. This time I kind of do, but I'm gonna have a better name for it in the case when I am a cotangent bundle. But as this name suggests, this is supposed to be some sort of categorification of the usual Fukaya category. So if you remember the sort of usual Fukaya category of X, that's some A infinity category where the objects are Lagrangians, the morphisms are intersection points, and then composition rules, the A infinity structure, is counts of holomorphic strips or holomorphic disks. So this is going to be a categorification of that. So I want to move each of those guys one level down in the sort of hierarchy. So now my one morphisms are going to be intersection points between holomorphic Lagrangians. My two morphisms are going to be holomorphic strips. And the composition rule between those is going to be, it's going to count solutions to the Fuder equation, which is this equation here, which if you have a map from a three manifold to a hyperkähler manifold, you can take I times del X plus J del Y plus K del Z equals zero. So it's a beautiful equation. You can try and redo like the entire literature of Fukaya categories and 2D symplectic geometry to like categorified symplectic geometry. That seems hard. So, but I pointed out here that Alexander Doan and Simon Reznikov do have a paper in forthcoming that calculates the one category of Holmes between the zero section and the graph of DF. So already that's a calculation that we are able to do. So we are sort of working our way up. Instead of sort of working my way up the sort of, I don't know, the hierarchy of repeating every calculation people have done on the B side or in Foucault categories, I'm just going to take the easier route to note that when X is a cotangent bundle, then the sort of usual one Foucault category of X, the wrapped Foucault category of X, can be expressed in terms of perverse sheaves on the base of the cotangent bundle. And so once again, you see I have a little yellow L here. So once again, this is, you might think of it as kind of a singular support condition. In the wrapped Foucault literature, this L is what's called a stop for the wrapping. So this L is what you get if you have a Landau-Ginzburg model. If someone gives you a symplectic manifold equipped with a function, you can take a general fiber of that function and say, okay, I want to sort of do some sort of, you know, wrapping of my symplectic manifold like away from a fiber of that function. And kind of that's where that L comes from. The L is the boundary of L at infinity is related to the fiber of that function. Anyway, the wrapped Foucault category, the partially wrapped Foucault category, also called a Foucault-Seidel category. Maybe I should also say, like, this is also called the Foucault-Seidel type category, can be described in terms of the category of perverse sheaves on V with singular support in L. With singular support contained inside of L. And I should say this proposal of relating the Foucault category to perverse sheaves, or constructible sheaves. I mean, this was originally due to Nadler and Zaslow with sort of a long literature, you know, coming back before. I mean, there were calculations all the way going back to Ginzburg relating, you know, characteristic cycles and Lagrangians and so forth. And of course, Kashiwara has papers on this also, Kashiwara Shapira, and of course, Fukaya uses models. So there's a lot of literature on this. The current state of the art, I should say, is these papers of Ganatra, Pardon, Shenda, for people who are interested in this sort of Fukaya categories literature, that we now have a good way of understanding Fukaya categories of cotangent bundles. So in this talk, what I propose is that I'm going to model this two Fuk X, whatever it is, this categorified Foucault category, in the case when X is a cotangent bundle, by a categorification of perverse sheaves. And luckily, I happen to know that Kapranov and Shechtman have written a number of papers on a categorification of perverse sheaves called perverse Schobers. So I propose that we take these perverse Schobers, which have been defined sort of like in the Kapranov-Shechtman papers, you read it like this is the data of a perverse Schober, and it's easy to read that paper and stare at it and say, oh, like they haven't just given me like some list of data here. What they've actually sort of secretly told me is a recipe for a two category. And that's a two category whose objects are those things that they've given. So this two category of perverse Schobers, it's a two category. Once again, it depends on this L. Because what they define is sort of perverse Schobers, you know, on say C with singular support in some number of points, like some hyperplane arrangement or some something, whatever. So I'll explain, by the way, this category, I should say this category, two category of perverse Schobers is not defined in a lot of generality. It's only defined sort of by hand in very special cases where kind of you stare at the one category description of perverse sheaves and you stare really hard until you've mastered it and then you guess what the categorification is. So it would be better to have a more principled construction of this, which, you know, our construction here is suggesting that like maybe these Fuder equation stuff are actually giving you some construction of that. I don't want to speculate too much here. So I'll tell you what they are in the cases we care about in a moment. Let me just do the easiest case first. Let me say that L, my Lagrangian, is just the zero section of my cotangent bundle. In that case, what's the two category of perverse Schobers on V with singular support in the zero section? Well, if you have singular support in the zero section, you're just a local system. So this is just the two category of local systems of categories on V. So that's very easy. As I'll say in just one second, like if you have a local system of categories on the circle, that's the same as like a category with an automorphism. So it's what you expect. Okay, so before I sort of go back to 3D mirror symmetry, let me pause for a second and ask if there are any questions about the aim.
I actually have a question, but it really is about going back to 3D mirror symmetry. But in that case, if I understand correctly, this spaces and questions should be some kind of loop spaces, right? So they are going to be sort of infinite.
No. You mean that I'm studying? I mean, the point is that I have traded off, as you can see, maybe in the 3D mirror symmetry, but every time I go down a categorical level, I give myself like more loops or something. Like the point is that like if I were at the sort of a one category of boundary conditions, I'm just going to be studying V mod G itself. Like I moved up to a loop space when I started studying line operators. That was when I plugged in a circle into my TFT.
So in that case, you will be applying this to just V mod G. Or you're wrong.
Yes, I'll be applying to V mod G, and I'll say at the end of my talk that then we can recover. Hopefully, you know, we can recover the BFN construction and this other construction by sort of taking the sort of trace of this two category we defined. So this is the sort of principle that like you can trade yourself off loops and categorical levels. So like if you're studying the sort of, you know, one category associated to a loop space, you can often recover that from the two category associated to the sort of finite geometry.
Okay, and the other question is that if I know that you don't like to do that, but suppose that instead of Perrow's sheaves, you want to think about D modules.
Yeah.
Do you have some kind of model for this category in that session?
No, I don't think we have a model for the two category if we're studying D modules. I mean, people can jump in. I don't know if Justin, you want to say anything. I'm not even sure if such a two category is supposed to exist in that Durham setting.
Yeah, I think like when. Well, go ahead, Sasha.
Yeah, okay, Justin, go ahead.
Oh, because I was going to say that, like, you know, when you do the D modules, you're usually deforming off this holomorphic topological twist. And if you were just in a holomorphic topological twist, there's no expectation that you can go all the way down to a point. And basically, you can't talk about, like, you know, defects that are, like, you know, like a real line inside of C, for example. Like, you couldn't talk about a defect living there in this holomorphic language, and that's the kind of thing you need to go down to a two category. So if you do this Durham, the Durham setting where you study D modules, I don't expect that you can go down to a point. So like really this thing would tie into like Betty Langlands and not like the Durham Langlands.
Well, but somehow this as I said, this is a deformation. So formally speaking, this is not
I'm a little curious about that. I mean, it is sort of still a topological field theory in the Durham setting. So,
I mean, I don't know. So basically what you would need is some kind of a two category, and you'd have to invent some kind of version of like Hochschild homology that spits out like a chiral category that takes a two category and spits that kind of thing out in order to get like the Durham D modules on the algebraic loop space. And I just don't know how to do that. I have like no.
Well, but this you will need if you want to connect the two categories.
Yes, but okay, but we don't know. I mean, the short answer is that we don't know right now. You know how to do a two category with D modules. I won't say it's impossible.
You don't know there's not a single example when you know the answer.
No.
Okay.
Maybe I should think more about this. Maybe you if you really like, you know, this question, you should think about this simple example, like T star, the cotangent bundle of C star. Maybe I'll think about that. But I don't have a proposal just yet. Let me move on to that now. So let's talk about 3D mirror symmetry.
Ben,
let's talk about this.
From like a pedestrian physicist view, how should I think of this singular support condition? Like from the 3D TQFT, or even maybe if you
it relates to the wrapping. It's where you want to stop the wrapping that you do in the category. So,
mass parameter would give you this.
Oh, so this.
Oh yeah. So I should say that this L, yeah. So a mass parameter is going to give you like maybe a piece in the case that we consider in this talk. we're going to consider like a mass parameter will give you a piece of the L that you study, and we're studying like the union of those L's for all the different possible mass parameters.
Yeah, and that's something that like a physicist wouldn't necessarily do, but we'll eventually extract examples where L comes from the mass parameter. But we consider more general L's as well.
So it's like some specially chosen collection of chambers in the space of mass parameters.
Well, no, we're taking sort of all the chambers at once is what we're doing.
Oh, all of the chambers.
Yeah. Oh. So that's what we're doing. We're just taking all the chambers, and then later on, we're going to throw away everything that we don't care about to recover, you know, one particular mass parameter.
Ah, okay. Cool. Thanks.
So yeah, so we'll see that later. So let's do 3D mirror symmetry before I move on to the main results. Oh, yeah.
Maybe this is too elementary, but could you give like a very, could you say how, what's the basic idea between passing from the Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle to some category associated to the base?
Sure. I mean, this is what, first of all, I mean, I should say this is like the principle in all of symplectic geometry, that the symplectic geometry of a cotangent bundle is the differential geometry or whatever of its base. That's like a meta theorem principle, whatever, in symplectic geometry. The simplest example to say of what I mean by this is that the Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle is, let me say it just in terms of if you have no singular support condition. So if you have no singular support condition and you study the wrapped Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle, it's generated by a single object, which is a cotangent fiber. And the endomorphisms of that cotangent fiber turn out to be generated by all these Rabe chords, which are geodesics. And if you kind of work it out, you get that it's chains on the base loop space of the base. So in other words, the wrapped Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle is equivalent to the category of chains on the base loop space of the base, modules over that, which is the category of local systems on the base. This is the sort of string topology perspective that the Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle is just string topology. The other thing you can say is that kind of the Fukaya category of a cotangent bundle, my favorite Lagrangians in there are conormals to submanifolds. And I should think of conormals to submanifolds, those are like conic Lagrangians. I should think of those as being like singular supports for D modules or constructible sheaves or constructible functions or whatever. And then, you know, there's like microlocal formulas for extracting invariants of those that match up with the invariants you would construct from symplectic geometry.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
So I don't know, did either of those answers help at all? Or?
That's cool. Yeah,
okay, yeah, feel free. I mean, people can ask more questions about this at the end of the talk, but we're just going to maybe for now assume that we have some model in terms of perverse sheaves, perverse Schobers, whatever. Okay, so before we get to the main theorem of the talk, let's warm up with this particle vortex duality example. So these two categories I sort of learned, you know, from Telemann's ICM address. So this is mirror symmetry for the cotangent bundle of BC star and the cotangent bundle of C star. And what's going to make this example really easy is that L, my Lagrangian L, is the zero section in this case. So the first thing I can do is I can study the B side on the left and the A side on the right. So on the left, I have two. So since L is the zero section, I'm just looking at two, what's called two Q co of BC star. That's just modules over Q co of BC star. Q co of BC star is just representations of C star. What's a representations of C star? That's just like, I have like one representation of weight N and, I'm going through this too fast. 2Q-co of BC star, let me highlight some things here, is equal to the two category of module categories. Maybe I'll write a two here so we know we're studying module categories. It's equal to the two category of module categories over rep C star. So in other words, it's equivalent to the data of a category with an action of the category of representations of C star. And so I have to know, like my category has some endomorphism given by tensoring with the weight one representation. And that's actually an automorphism because I can tensor with the weight minus one representation. And that's all the data. So in other words, I get a category equipped with an automorphism. And that is what we already said is a local system of categories on C star. So cha-ching, we just proved 3D mirror symmetry at the level of two categories of boundary conditions. And now let's do the other side. Maybe this one's a little more complicated. I don't want to go into all the details, but like, again, if you think really hard about what's a local system of categories on BC star, it makes things easier if you do a couple deloopings. Then what you get is the data of a category equipped with a map from chains on the base loop space of C star into the Hochschild cohomology of the category. And then you remember that chains on the base loop space of C star is functions on the dual C star. And that sort of matches up with what you were supposed to get. So this is nice. You can ask me more questions about it later, but this is, you know, the basic, the most basic example of 3D mirror symmetry. So everything you do about 3D mirror symmetry, you should like understand this thing first. But so this talk is going to be about not pure gauge theories, but gauge theories with matter. So this is the basic duality that we're considering in this talk. Sorry, let me pause for 1 second to see if anyone had questions about that example.
Can you swap the A and B twists in that? I did both.
I did both sides. The first line and the second line, I've switched which one was A and which one was B. Right? That's what my color scheme was supposed to suggest. This,
oh, right? Sorry. Thanks. Yep.
Yeah. Yes. That's, you know, so that's, I'm doing my best to maintain this helpful color scheme through the talk of blue is B and red is A for some reason. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so now we're gonna add matter. So this is the duality that we're considering in this talk. And this is the like fundamentally new thing is that now we're going to have a Lagrangian, which is, like before, okay, so for this example I just told you, Telemann did not need to know what a perverse Schober was because, you know, he was just studying local systems of categories. So this example, this new example, is the first time when like this proposal about using perverse Schobers really like proves its worth. And so, well, let me just say, like more generally, what we are going to, what we're going to get is this sort of Gale duality that if we have an exact sequence of tori, so T is a subtorus of C star to the N with quotient torus G, then we get a duality between these two cotangent stacks. And so the theorem is that the two categories agree, that the two category of perverse Schobers on C to the N mod T is equal to the two category of coherent sheaves of categories on C to the N mod G check. So that's our main theorem, which I'm going to explain in a moment. Let's first of all say what L is. So the basic case of this theorem, this is sort of everything can be deduced from this one, is where on the left-hand side I take C and on the right-hand side I take C mod C star. And my L is going to be this. So on the left, inside of the cotangent bundle of C, I'm taking the zero section union the conormal to zero. And then in general, I'm just gonna take like the product of N copies of that and then quotient it by the torus. So that's what my L is. Okay, this is the statement of our field. And now let's sort of unpack this with what we've learned so far. So now I have to tell you what a perverse Schober is. So we've reached the point in the talk when like, okay, I have a category of perverse Schobers on the left. The right-hand side, you can figure out from what I've told you already. The left-hand side, you can't. Let's see what it is. So let's first of all recall what's the perverse sheaves on C with this singular support condition. So this is perverse sheaves on C with a singularity at zero. It's a very classical calculation. It goes back to Verdier, although there's also, you know, many repetitions of this calculation by Deligne, by, you know, whatever, Magrange, by, I don't know, by whoever, you know, that says a perverse sheaf on C with singular support at zero is given by the data of, you have to know it's vanishing cycles. That's a vector space, which I'm calling phi. You have to know it's nearby cycles, which is a vector space I'm calling psi. And there are two maps between them, like this, which traditionally are called the canonical and variation maps. And they satisfy these relations that if I take one minus the composition of either of those maps, then that's equal to the monodromy. It turns out there's a monodromy of my sheaf, a monodromy on the base, and then a microlocal monodromy. So in other words, one minus canonical composed variation or vice versa are invertible automorphisms of these vector spaces. So that's the category, very simple quiver with relations. And now if you're really smart, you can guess how to categorify this. So Kapranam and Shechtman teach us that perverse Schobers on C with this singular support condition are what are called spherical functors. So that's a notion that was proposed. I think I must have written it down somewhere. Or did I not? By Rina Ono, later developed in work of Ono and Logvinenko. Sorry, I forgot to write that down. So these are spherical functors. So what's a spherical functor? They should really be called spherical adjunctions. So it's the data of a pair of categories now. Instead of vector spaces, I have a pair of categories, C phi and C psi. I have a functor and its right adjoint functor between them. And then I have to categorify these relations one minus the composition. So you categorify a minus sign by taking the cone on a map. So here I'm taking fiber or cofiber on some map. And what are those maps? Where do maps come from? From the identity and the composition of two functors, they come from the unit and co-unit maps in a monad, right? In a composition. So kind of, I have a map from the identity on C phi to FRF, that's the unit morphism, and FFR to the identity, that's the co-unit. And so I get these two endomorphisms now. T psi is an endomorphism of C psi, T phi is an endomorphism of T phi, and I'm going to require those are invertible endomorphisms, that they're automorphisms of those two categories. So maybe I'll even draw that here. Okay, so that's the two category of spherical functors. Any questions on this? Okay. So the idea, so let me give you, this isn't the proof. I'll tell you, where the proof comes from in a second, but let me give you the idea of 3D mirror symmetry here. So where do objects in the right-hand two category come from? You should imagine like a coherent sheaf of categories on C mod C star. Where does it come from? It comes from like some variety mapping to C mod C star. And then coherent sheaves on that variety is like a coherent sheaf of categories over C mod C star. So suppose I have X as maps to C mod C star. That's the same data as a line bundle on X together with a section of that line bundle, which is like the same as telling myself a divisor on X, right? And from that data, I can get a spherical functor, right? Which is the push forward from a divisor. That's if you're in algebraic geometry, this is your favorite spherical functor, is the push forward from coherent sheaves on a divisor. And now the kind of idea you should have in your head at this point is that there's a universal case of the above. Like, what's the universal thing mapping to C mod C star? Besides C mod C star, it's zero mod C star. And let me just use pullback instead of push forward here. So we get a spherical functor, which is I can take coherent sheaves on C mod C star and pull them back to coherent sheaves on zero mod C star. That map has another name. Coherent sheaves on C mod C star is what a mathematician would call the category of filtered vector spaces, which is a vector space equipped with a filtration. And coherent sheaves on BC star is, what a mathematician might call the category of graded vector spaces. And there's a spherical functor between them called take the associated grade. I've just said that this was the universal case, and that's actually true. So our main theorem, so this is how the proof actually goes, is we prove this theorem that in the two category of spherical functors, if I take my favorite spherical functor, the one I just wrote down, this one where I take a filtered vector space and pass it to its associated graded, that co-represents the functor of like measuring any other spherical functor at its category C phi. So in other words, this spherical functor, coherent sheaves on C mod C star, mapping to coherent sheaves on BC star, this is what you might call the universal spherical functor.
NG, we call the universal spherical functor something else. You really should.
I do know that. Like, okay, if you read the paper, you're going to see something else. But I would nevertheless like to call this the universal.
Why don't you call it like the micro stock or the categorified micro stock?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, this is a if you're thinking about this in terms of the in terms of the A side, this functor this spherical functor co-represents the functor of taking the sort of micro stock at one of the two components of this Lagrangian L. So if you're a Fukaya categories person, you might say like each of these components has a linking disk passing through it. And the endomorphisms of that, the sort of the HOMs out of that linking disk are like ask for what's the micro stock, what's the micro stock here? So the linking disk I've drawn up here, the one that passes through the sort of conormal to zero, but not the zero section, is what in sort of non-abelian group case people would call the sort of Whitaker thing. So there was just this paper of Nadler and Taylor this week where they discuss you know, the Whitaker functor and co-representing the sort of take micro stock. That's kind of what this guy is doing in a categorified sense. So okay, maybe I shouldn't have called this the universal spherical functor, but I'm just, you know, whatever. So I can put this together into a proof. So I have so I'm studying the two category of perverse sheaves of perverse Schobers on C with this singular support. That's the two category of spherical functors. It's generated, it turns out, by two spherical functors. This one I just wrote down, and also its left adjoint, where I sort of switch which direction the functor is going. And I've told you enough already to compute what's the Hams among these two spherical functors, because like Gur goes from Filt to Gurvect, Filtvect to Gurvect, and so if I take its endomorphisms, I'm just measuring what's the left-hand category. Oh, it's filtered vector spaces. Or if I take, you know, the Hams from one to the sort of the adjoint to the other one, then I'm measuring what's the right-hand category, and that's gradient vector spaces. So this is a calculation which you can, you know, sit down and do. And then I can rewrite this as this coherent sheaves on C mod C star, coherent sheaves on zero mod C star, and the fiber product of zero with itself over C star, where I've used a bit of causal duality to make this this last one work out. And this is the same, as we already learned, as the endomorphisms of my favorite two objects in the sort of Kapustin-Rosansky-Salinas two category the zero section in the cotangent bundle of C mod C star and the conormal to zero inside of C mod C star. And those two objects generate the two category of coherent sheaves of categories on C mod C star with this singular support condition. So that is the proof of the main theorem. Before I move on to sort of applications, you know, imposing stability parameters and, you know, decategorifying, which, you know, will depend on interest in the last few minutes, let me pause here for questions. Okay, well, if there's no questions, I'll keep going and people can interrupt me or ask at the end of the talk. Let me point out the corollary here, which is that now we're going to move to this sort of category of case. So before we were studying the two categories of boundary conditions for these two field theories, T star of C to the N mod T and T star of C to the N mod G check. And so as we've discussed, like ultimately what we would like to do is we'd like to impose a stability parameter here. I've written down two parameters now. So first of all, I'm no longer taking just the cotangent bundle to this stack, but I'm passing to this stable locus inside of it. Right, so the cotangent bundle of C to the N on stability parameter alpha T, this is embeds as an open substack inside of the stack we were studying before. And it's this open stack of like alpha semi-stable points. The first bit of news here is that we know sort of what's the categorical operation on the A and B sides that corresponds to passing to this open substack. On the B side, we learned about it from Lev in his talk last week. On the A side, we know what to do also. And then the second thing is that I've restricted my Lagrangian now. I've deleted some components of my Lagrangian. So now I've done what physicists would say. I've imposed a mass parameter, which means I picked a co-character of my flavor group, which is the residual torus that's acting on this space. I picked a co-character, so I get a C star action on my space. And now I'm taking only those components of my Lagrangian, which are the stable sets for that C star action. So this is what a mathematician would call a choice of a category O Lagrangian. I noticed, so if I think about where these two parameters live, I guess I didn't write this down, but alpha is living in the alpha is a stability parameter for T. So alpha is living in T check. And beta is a co-character for the G. Is a co-character for G. So alpha beta is living in the algebra G. And of course, you can see that these get switched. And we are able to prove this 3D mirror symmetry result. You might call it 3D mirror symmetry between a pair of two categories O. So these two categories O are like category O, but they're better because they're two categories. And something else that's very interesting is that unlike usual category O, which is maybe you might say kind of an A-type object, we get both A and B-type two categories O. Yes, they. If you impose an extra twist when you sort of decategorify, then you can recover, you get two sort of maybe causal dual pictures of the category O for the same variety. If you just start on one variety. I can say something more about that if people would like, but let me just sort of, let me end my talk here a few minutes early and people can tell me which of these things they'd like to hear about. The basic takeaway from this that you're supposed to get is that there's lots of different kinds of decategorification you can do here. You can recover by doing these decategorifications. You can recover the BFN construction. You can recover the Braden-Licata-Proudfoot-Webster symplectic duality between these hypertoric categories O. You can recover a Betti version of the Hilburn-Raskin theorem, which was a sort of Derome equivalence of between the categories of line operators in these theories. So there's like a huge amount of structure. This final corollary is meant to just kind of illustrate my point that I made earlier in the talk, that like the equivalence of the two categories of boundary conditions is kind of the master thing you can hope to prove. And kind of if you can prove this, then you sort of filter, you can filter everything down after that. Do I want to go into details? Maybe let me just end my talk here, and then that gives us extra time for people to ask questions, so people can ask about which things they'd like me to talk about. So I'll end right here.
I personally would like to hear about better version of Hilburn-Raskin, but I don't insist.
Okay, well, why don't I say a few words about that, which is, In this case, so suppose let me put it this way. So X is still going to be T star Y. And suppose that I'm going to say some words about the kind of decategorification you want to do that will give you the category of line operators in the theory. Maybe I should write that. So now we're trying to recover the one category, in fact, E2, one category of line operators from the two category of boundary conditions. So I'll say it on the B side first where it's understood, and then I'll give us a conjecture on the A side. So on the B side, suppose that your Lagrangian L, which as we recall is a conic Lagrangian inside of X, maybe to keep my color scheme going, L is still yellow. Suppose that L is given by the conormal to some Z, which is mapping to Y. So I have some Z, which is mapping to Y, and I take my L to be the conormal. So for instance, Y is equal to, so in the case we cared about in this talk, Y was equal to C, or maybe C mod C star, let's say, if it was on the B side, in the original example I gave, although you can switch off the torus via some 3D, 4D boundary nonsense. If Y is C mod C star, I can take Z to be C mod C star disjoint union 0 mod C star. And this gives me my Lagrangian, my singular support Lagrangian L. And the theorem of Benzvi-Nadler-Pregel tells you how to take trace in this case. So this is Benzvi-Nadler-Pregel. And essentially what they tell you is that if you take the trace, they didn't phrase it in these terms, but before I state their theorem, let me just remind you that kind of, I didn't state this explicitly, but the two category of coherent sheaves of categories with singular support in L on Y was equal to modules for coherent sheaves on this convolution. Whoops, coherent sheaves on this convolution, right? Mod two. Okay, so this is the two category of module categories for this monoidal category. This was sort of, this should follow from, you know, the stuff I already told. If you just think hard about what I already told you, then this is what this this two category of coherent sheaves of categories is. And so it's a theorem of Benzfeed, Nadler, Pregel that the trace of this category, of this monoidal category, is equal to the category, is equal to a category of coherent sheaves on the loop space of Y. This is the kind of Betti loop space. All right, LB, so we know it's the Betti loop space with a certain singular support condition, lambda, which I won't go into explaining here, although you can guess what it is from these considerations. So if we apply this to the B side.
So Z enters into lambda.
What?
Z enters into lambda, right?
Yes, yes. So this lambda clearly is something that is determined by the conormal is determined by this L, which is which is the conormal to Z. I think that, don't quote me on this, I think that lambda should be just loops into L, the Betti loop space of L itself, which is a Lagrangian inside the Betti loop space of T star Y. If you sort of work through all the definitions, because the Arrinken-Gates story, there's a shift in me, but there's also a shift if you replace cotangent bundle of a loop space with loop space of a cotangent bundle. Whatever, yeah, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's that. So okay, so I've just recovered the one side of the Betti version of the Hilbern-Raskin theorem. And so the sort of conjecture that I would like to make is that the trace of the two category of perverse Schobers with some singular support condition on Y has an expression in terms of the, in terms of some category of constructible sheaves or perverse sheaves, let's say, with some singular support condition on the actual topological loop space of Y. So this is a conjecture, but in the case that we are considering, we can prove, that it matches up. We can prove a version of the Betti Hilbern-Raskin theorem. So we have some evidence for this conjecture already.
What will be the final statement? I mean, the final statement is that.
So the final statement the final statement would be the Betti version of the Hilbern-Raskin theorem would be that coherent sheaves with some singular support condition on the Betti loop space of C mod C star is equal to perverse sheaves with a certain singular support condition I'll write it like C formal on series T. This is a theorem that we can prove. It's not written down yet, but
again, and can you say what this lambda is on the right in the right hand side?
On the right hand side, the simplest way to say what it is in the right hand side is that this Laurent polynomial space has a stratification by loop order, and I take the conormals to strata.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So what you might say is that and the point is that this is the trace of our two category that we've discussed here, and of course this is, as we proved during the talk today, equal to the two category tuco is equal to two perv on the other side. Whoops, these should all be two perv, whatever. So this is 2-co of C mod C star. This is 2-perv of C, whatever. So this, by composing all these equalities, I get something here. So that's nice.
I'm confused why you write perverse sheaves all the time. It's you're actually working with derived categories, right? So.
This is like perverse Schobers, which we don't know how to categorify. We only know how to categorify perverse sheaves. I agree that There's something a little confusing about.
But actually cool. I mean, the theorem is about
the quantum. Right. So I guess I should really say, like, you know, all constructible sheaves or something, or the derived category of Popper sheaves. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's no Abelian. There's no Abelian equivalence.
You probably could match a T structure, but we didn't do it.
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can. I mean, there is an Abelian statement. They both have T structures. I mean, I guess probably the T structure that you want on the left hand side is not going to be the usual T structure. It's going to be some kind of perverse coherent T structure, maybe. I don't know.
Does constructing these categories as derived centers of a T category help you describe a great fusion structure?
That's a good, you mean like, you mean like the E2, you want to know the E2 structure on these categories of line operators, or?
Yes, sure. Or I guess at a simpler level, a graded tensor structure, yes. So yeah. I would chain and derive them on the view, but yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, so the statement of the Benz v. Nadler Pregel theorem is that these are both E2 categories here.
No. Benji, there's the centers.
Oh.
Like a trace versus center, right?
Sorry, the center, you're right. Okay, I take it back. The theorem, they have another theorem that the center of this category is equal to coherent sheaves that are proper over Y on the Betti loop space of Y. This side here, these are both E2 categories here. So this is supposed to be an equivalence of E2 categories. So this is telling you the E2 structure that you get from taking center, because that's like a Hochschild type thing, you have an E2 structure that corresponds to the E2 structure on coherent sheaves on loops Y, which comes from the sort of pair of Pans product, the pair of Pans correspondence on loops Y.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. It's exactly what one would want. In the Hilbert-Raskin setup, the categories don't quite have that. They're a little too large for fusion products to make sense. And so it sounds like you're saying that this would morally be automatic here.
Yeah, I'm saying that if you take centers of the two categories we discussed, you do get, at least on the B side where we know things, then you do get an actual E2 category. Coherent sheaves on the Betti loop space of Y has an E2 structure. This is, you know, all part of this beautiful paper of Benz v. Francis Nadler. They discussed this.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, let's thank Ben again.
Great, thanks everybody.
Thank you very much. And then we'll meet again in 53 minutes for a discussion on things related to this talk and what else one would want to do with homological mirror symmetry in three dimensions and open questions.
Awesome.
Thank you.
All right. And for anyone who had trouble understanding Tudor, we're meeting again at 2 for a discussion of 3D mirror symmetry and in particular the 3D A model.